It's 5:30 p.m. and you're listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for East Central Illinois.
The many voices of your community on Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center Radio News.
You're listening to the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center Radio News for Monday, March 25th, 2002. I'm your host, Michael Feltus. We are local, we are non-corporate, and we are definitely not brought to you by Archer Daniels Midland. On today's program, we'll feature two reports, one by local media journalist Dan Chambers, who did some short interviews with local activists on issues of racial equality and equity in Champaign-Urbana, and then also a longer report from our intrepid overseas reporter, Pauline Bartolone, who is working with Radio for Peace International in Costa Rica. She did an interview with Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive, the Madison, Wisconsin-based progressive magazine, and we'll be featuring excerpts from that interview from her. So, we'll be bringing those to you shortly during this next half hour. Stay tuned. Before we begin with those features, we'll be featuring some headlines. The Champaign School Board meets again regarding Dr. Dolores Henry. Dr. Dolores Henry, Assistant Superintendent for Equity and Education in the Champaign Unit 4 School District, is to be out of town on Tuesday, March 26th, recruiting teachers. This is part of the job she was hired to do by the school district, acting under a mandate from the Office of Civil Rights after decades of complaints about racial inequity in Champaign schools. This Tuesday also happens to be the day the school board has scheduled an emergency meeting to discuss a recommendation from the current interim superintendent, Dr. Carol Stack, to reassign Dr. Henry, in effect removing Dr. Henry, the only African-American in Champaign School Administration, from the position of Equity Officer for Unit 4. No complaints about the performance of Dr. Henry in her job have been made public, and the recent actions by Dr. Stack and the board are seen by many as following a pattern of foot-dragging and hostility to attempts to address racial inequity in Champaign schools. At the last emergency hearing on Dr. Henry's position 2 weeks ago, some 100 community members showed up to speak out in favor of Dr. Henry and against the proposed reassignment. At that meeting, Dr. Mark Aber, who had been hired by the school board to conduct a racial climate survey, asked the board to make public the reasons for the proposed action, informing them that Dr. Henry, who was present, was waiving a right to privacy in the matter invoked by the board as the reason for their secrecy. Last Monday, community members picketed outside the school board's meeting regarding candidates for superintendent. The picketers called for board action on problems brought to light by the racial climate survey, carrying out the mandates of the equity implementation plan, approval of the charter school, and rejection of the reassignment of Dr. Henry. The emergency meeting on Dr. Henry's status will be held Tuesday, March 26th at 6 p.m. at the Mellon Administration Building, located at John and New Streets in Champaign.
And between 5,000 and 7,000 community organizers, peace activists, environmentalists, and others gathered in a state fair livestock barn in Austin, Texas this past weekend for the Rolling Thunder Down Home Democracy Tour. In the words of performer Michelle Schacht, it was an unqualified success. The tour is the brainchild of America's self-proclaimed favorite populist, Jim Hightower, and the extravaganza seemed as big as Texans might like to brag about. Music, food, revival-flavored speeches and games, which included throw a ball at a nuclear missile and Enron democracy shredder, rounded out the bill. Filmmaker and author Michael Moore, whose book Stupid White Men now tops the New York Times bestseller list, was also on hand, as was columnist Molly Ivins, Hightower, and U.S. Senator Paul Wellstone. Their message was simple. Dissent is as American as apple pie, and not everyone, even in Texas, is in love with George W. Bush's presidency. WTO protest organizer Mike Dolan said that the goal was, quote, to put the party back in politics, unquote. The gathering had the support of over 40 groups, ranging from the Ruckus Society, the AFL-CIO, United States Against Sweatshops, and the Service Employees International Union, among others. This event was the first of a series to be held in cities across the U.S. this year. The Rolling Thunder Down Home Democracy Tour will be in Chicago on June 15th. And speaking of Michael Moore, his website indicates that he will be coming to Champaign-Urbana on his Stupid White Men book tour on Wednesday, April 15th. No information about the local location or time has yet been made public, but stay tuned for more information that might be had at www.michaelmoore.com or at the Urbana-Champaign Indie Media website at www.ucimc.org for the latest updates on this event.
In another update on an action that was featured both on Democracy Now! And Free Speech Radio News, angels descend on the FCC from Philadelphia. Media activists dressed as angels descended on the offices of the Federal Communications Commission in Washington, D.C. on Friday. They spoke and marched and sang anti-corporate hymns in order to draw attention to FCC moves to increase corporate monopolization of the nation's airwaves. The crowd of 50 to 100 people, organized by activists from Philly-based Media Tank and Prometheus Radio Project, among others, rallied across the street from the FCC offices, where they drew the attention of passers-by, rush hour traffic, and FCC staff, who ironically looked down upon the angelic protesters. The demonstrators, from as far away as New York and Chapel Hill, North Carolina, were dressed in their best angel garb, complete with flowing satin gowns, halos, cardboard trumpets, and angel wings made from fabric, cardboard, papier-mâché, and unconscionable amounts of gold glitter. Attempts to deliver a crystal ball to FCC Chairman Michael Powell were rebuffed by security staff. The demonstration's angel theme came as a result of Powell's comment last year. The night after I was sworn in, I waited for a visit from the angel of the public interest. I waited all night, but she did not come. For more info, including pictures of the demonstration and articles related to the event, including audio from Champaign-Urbana's own Robert McChesney, a professor at the university, you can visit the Washington, D.C. Indie Media Center. That website is dc.indiemedia.org. More information can also be located at the Philadelphia IMC website, www.phillyimc.org, or from the website of the organizers, Media Tank, which is located at www.mediatank.org. In an announcement on local matter, meeting as a committee of the whole, the Urbana City Council will begin consideration of a living wage policy this evening. The meeting starts in Council Chambers in the Urbana City Building on Vine Street at 7:30. Public participation, there is time for public participation so that citizens may comment. If Urbana adopts a living wage policy, it will be the fourth unit of government in Champaign County to do so. In general, Urbana already meets the requirement to pay all its full-time workers at least a living wage, but its approval of the policy will see Urbana making a specific commitment to continue doing so and to refrain from the temptation to contract out work currently done by city employees at less than living wage in the future. A big thank you to Dan Chambers, Mark Enslin, Mike Lehman, and Rolando de Aguiar from Philly IMC for those headlines. That is some music from the Joshua Redman Quartet from their CD Passage of Time. I believe that's the track 7, Enemies Within, which is what drew my attention to them. Anyway, we'll be turning now to a short report prepared by Dan Chambers of the Urbana IMC, interviewing local media activists, local activists regarding issues of racial equality and equity within the Champaign County schools. So we'll go to that right away.
Children first, politics last.
Children first, politics last.
Children first, politics last. Children first.
I'm Dan Chambers. It's Tuesday, March 22nd, and I'm standing with Roy. Roy, what's your last name?
Marcelin.
I am. Roy Marcelin is with the local NAACP. And why are we here at the corner of New Street and John in Champaign?
We're here, first of all, to reject the proposed repositioning of Dr. Dolores Henry, and also the scheduling of public hearing and enter into a good faith negotiation with concerned citizens to reach a favorable resolution regarding known incidents of racial hostility reported at events with Muhammad Seymour High School, and also to support the proposed charter school initiative, direct the facility and staff to carry out equal implementation plans with a greater sense of urgency. So we definitely need help with the kids, the programs that we're trying to get the school to do, work with the kids a little more than what they have been doing. And the last one is to take immediate and systematic actions on the racial climate survey recommendations.
And what's your name, sir?
My name is Aaron Ammons.
Aaron, why are you here today?
We are here to protest the reassigning of Dr. Dolores Henry and a couple of other things, as a matter of fact, to have equal access and put our children first in the community and to make righteous decisions and not based on politics.
Okay. And and where do you work, sir?
My wife and I, we have our own business called Life Strategies Institute. We do mentoring, parental counseling, and motivational speakers.
Ma'am, what's your name?
My name is Gladys Hunt.
And why are you here today, Gladys?
Well, I'm here today to be part of the protest against what's going on in Champaign-Urbana School District, Champaign School District.
And in your opinion, what do you see that's happening that's cause for alarm?
Well, I think we have a long history of inequity in education, of institutional racism, and apparently we have a board that's not listening to the people that it's supposedly there to serve. So we feel like we have to maybe step it up a notch and get them to hear us, and this is one way to do it.
Sir, what's your name?
My name is Herb Stevens, and I'm president of Racial Justice Now, and we are the originators of the litigation against Champaign Unit 4, and also in Urbana District 116, and against the University of Illinois and its operation of University High School, which we consider to have a racist population.
What do you feel that upsets you about the situation out here at Unit 4?
On January 30, 2002, a consent decree was signed by Champaign Unit 4 in which it agreed to follow and practice the new policies that would bring racial reform to Champaign Unit 4. And yet, one week later, they decided to fire the only administrator in a senior capacity who is African-American. That's untenable, and by any means necessary, we expect to have that employee, Dr. Dolores Henry, restored to her position in Champaign Unit 4 as assistant superintendent in charge of implementing equity issues.
Children first, politics last. Children first, politics last. Children first, politics last. Children first, politics last. Children first.
You're listening to WFT Champaign at 90.1 FM, Community Radio for East Central Illinois, and I think that report prepared by Dan Chambers of the Urbana-Champaign Indie Media Center highlights the things that you will find on WEFT. Those are community voices, people out in the community who have very strong things to say. And we don't clip them, we don't cut down their speech into 30-second sound bites. We give them to you as they were given to us. Anyway, we will turn now from local issues away to more national issues as our intrepid reporter in Costa Rica, Pauline Bartolone, who's working with Radio for Peace International, a shortwave radio station broadcasting to countries all over the world and providing important information that would be inaccessible in any other capacity. She did an interview with Matthew Rothschild, who is the editor of the Madison, Wisconsin-based magazine The Progressive, in which she graciously made available to us back home. And we will bring you excerpts from that now. This interview deals with any number of issues regarding the climate of speech post-September 11th, as well as other issues regarding freedom of speech and freedom of the press. So we'll turn to that right now.
Here in the United States after September 11th, I've got to tell you, there were barely any voices of criticism allowed on mainstream media networks, or for that matter, even in the op-ed page of the New York Times. I've read the New York Times day in and day out since September 11th. I've looked in vain for one column by their paid columnists or one column by their freelancers that opposed the U.S. war in Afghanistan, that dared to say that the war was immoral or unjust or unnecessary. And I haven't been able to find a single one.
So I've seen a lot of articles that you've written on the website about the new McCarthyism. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, our website is www.progressive.org, and we try to do some things there that we don't always have space for in the magazine. And what the McCarthyism Watch feature there is all about, it's an offshoot of a cover story I did for the Progressive called The New McCarthyism. And what I did in that cover story was interview several people who have been approached by the FBI or the Secret Service for having so-called un-American things up on their walls, posters that are un-American, or an art museum in Texas that had a so-called un-American exhibit up. I mean, this is the essence of McCarthyism, to have the force of government come down upon you if you dare to express opinions contrary to the government's position. And so I interviewed several people like that, and then some journalists who were canned for writing articles that were unpopular, articles critical of George W. Bush. And I interviewed someone who had been fired from her job at, of all things, the U.S. Institute of Peace, because she was in favor of peace and against war after September 11th. I saw this as a new and very harrowing trend, and I still see it that way. And even as I was just proofreading the pages of that article right before it went to the printer, I heard of new examples of the new McCarthyism. For instance, there were people from Voices in the Wilderness, the great nonviolent protest group out of Chicago that has done so much to raise public awareness about the problems of sanctions against Iraq. This group, I talked to two individuals from it. They had gone to the post office in Chicago to buy stamps for their fundraising mailing. And the teller asked them what kind of stamps they wanted. Did they want an American flag stamp? And they said, no, we want any kind of stamp other than the American flag. The response from the teller, she called the police. I mean, this kind of hysteria that is beginning to sweep the country, I feel, is very reminiscent of the days of McCarthyism. It's not the deep and darkest day of McCarthyism, but it is an ominous cloud. And so I decided, well, I couldn't get all this stuff into my article. I might as well make room for it on the web, because the beauty of the web is there's such endless space there. So ever since that, in December and in January and February and now in March, I've been adding little items of people who have been victims of this new McCarthyism. For instance, last week I talked to a student who in Milwaukee, a private school, who had an assignment to put up any art exhibit he wanted as part of his final exam. And he put up an art exhibit of American flags upside down, and one of those, he wrote on it, home of the thieves, land of the slaves. And for that, he had that art exhibit torn down, and they just wouldn't let him put that stuff up there. and there have been other people who have been victims of this as well. There were two people in California, organic farmers, who when they were driving around town saw an overpass with American flags on it, and it's something that is just prevalent all over this country here. I see it all the time when I drive. And, you know, American flag is a freighted symbol sometimes. And these farmers and activists wanted to put up a sign that was less ambiguous, and they said, no more war or stop the bloodshed, something like that. I can't remember the exact words. And their sign was torn down. The American flags were kept up. And it is this kind of monotone, this is a monochrome that's allowed in the United States in times of war, I find very frightening to me. And so, you know, there's one example after another. I just talked to another editor who's been fired, another prize-winning editor who's been fired for criticizing Bush's Axis of Evil speech, among other things. And there's one example after another. And I thought for a while that maybe, well, I was making too much of this McCarthyism, perhaps. But no, the more I hear about it, the more stories I'm finding. And it may not go to the ultimate degree of the McCarthyism of the 1950s, but it's certainly the chilliest political time in my adult life. And I'm 43 years old.
So how do you suggest that people can still have a voice despite this new form of censorship?
Well, I certainly believe that people should go out in the street and use their First Amendment rights and exercise the right to protest and the right to assemble and the freedom of speech, because if we're so scared that the government's going to retaliate against us if we exercise our rights and thereby don't exercise our rights, we've already given up our rights. And that's certainly no way to go about it. People should do the most basic things, which are, you know, call your representatives, your senators, your congresspeople, and demand that they stand up to Attorney General Ashcroft, one of the scariest figures who's been in the Justice Department since the days of J. Edgar Hoover or Palmer back in the Palmer raids of the 1920s. People definitely have to stand up to him and tell our legislators to stand up to him, because he has no regard whatsoever for most of those 10 Bill of Rights, with the possible exception of the second, the right to bear arms, which he fervently believes in. But the other ones, the protection for civil liberties, he doesn't really care about. And he's done a lot to erode and corrode those rights already. So people need to protest the assault on our liberties that's happening right now. Protest with their congresspeople and protest in the streets. I did talk to a guy, another victim of the new McCarthyism in Indiana, Evansville, Indiana, who last month was there to protest a visit by Vice President Dick Cheney. And this guy's an environmentalist, so he was across the street from where Cheney was speaking. In fact, this protester was standing on the public sidewalk outside the main city county building in Evansville, and he had a sign, Dick Cheney, 19th Century Energy Man. And he was the lone protester there, and the police arrested him for disturbing the peace. For what? For holding up a sign and exercising his First Amendment rights. Finally, the district attorney dropped the charges. But that's just outrageous that basic political speech is criminalized in the United States these days.
So in your editor's note in the November issue, you wrote that your doors have been locked ever since you received hate mail in response to a piece you wrote about the September 11th attacks. Are your doors still locked, and are you still receiving hate mail?
Well, I'm pleased to announce that our doors are now open. We had a staff meeting several weeks ago where we reviewed the policy and decided to open up our doors. But we did get a barrage of hate mail, really nasty hate mail, the kind of which and the volume of which we hadn't received really in my memory. And so the prudent thing to do, the staff decided, and I as the senior manager here decided, was to lock the doors. You know, one person had said, come to New York and we'll play progressive basketball with your head. Another one said, why don't you go to Afghanistan and stand next to your friend Osama bin Laden and catch the first missile we throw over there. I mean, it was that kind of idiotic schoolyard bully talk that you hear, but you never know in a frenzied moment who's going to be really threatening and not just blowing off steam. So, yeah, we did lock the doors. We've had a long-standing policy here at the Progressive of having open doors, and we do have open doors now. I'm glad we were. I was always reluctant to lock it, even when we're in the midst of getting most of that hate mail, and that hate mail has trickled off a great deal, though, you know, now it comes in maybe once a week, whereas before it was, you know, several a day.
You also wrote an article back in January called George Bush's Permanent War. Can you explain the content of this article?
Yeah, I think we need to understand that after September 11th, George Bush really had a reawakening or a rebirth. I mean, he's a born-again war maker. And he decided to ask for a vast authorization of force from Congress, and Congress gave him an authorization almost as vast as the one he asked for when they said that you could attack any individual, any group, or any nation that was involved, in your belief anyway, yours, George W. Bush's, in the attacks of September 11th. So basically, this allows Bush just to go virtually anywhere attacking any country if he can make even the most tenuous association with the events of September 11th. And what he's been doing is just that. I mean, look at he's sending troops to Georgia, the former Republic of the Soviet Union. He's sending troops to Yemen. He's sending troops to the Philippines. They're talking about directly aiding the rebel, the government forces of Colombia against the rebels there. I believe they've been doing that under the table, but they want to do that over the table now. And there's really no need. In Spain, they've been involving themselves in suppressing terrorists there. I mean, there's basically no spot on the globe where you could spin and put your finger on it where the Bush administration doesn't want to escalate this war on terrorism. And what are the limits of the war? There's no limits in time. The Bush administration has already said this is a war that's may last 5 years, may last 10 years, may last 50 years, may last 100 years. George W. Bush called it the first battle of the war of the 21st century. I mean, the guy is war crazy. And so there's no limit in time. There's no limit in places, I mentioned, because they'll go anywhere. There's no limit on weaponry. I mean, the Bush administration is not holding anything back. And at some point, these wars, perhaps even most scary of all in Iraq, these wars may end with the United States using a nuclear weapon. I've already read speculation about this in the mainstream press, and this is the theory. The theory is that in 1991, the only reason Saddam Hussein did not use his biological or chemical weapons is that the Bush administration, that is George I, threatened him with nuclear annihilation if he did so. Now, Saddam Hussein, as brutal a person as he is not a suicidal person. And so he decided he'd rather stay in power and stay alive than use those weapons. Now, if the United States goes in and says the goal of attacking Iraq this time is killing Saddam Hussein and overthrowing him, Saddam Hussein is going to have no reason whatsoever from holding back anything. So if he has some trace biological or chemical weapons left, and who knows if he does or doesn't, if he has them, he is going to have no incentive not to hurl them at the United States. And if he hurls them at the United States, the U.S. is already on record, at least Bush's father was, that the United States is going to retaliate with a nuclear weapon. Is that what we want the war on terrorism to end with, a nuclear devastation by the United States, the first one since 1945 and the bombing of Nagasaki and Hiroshima? I sure don't, and I don't believe that most people in the world do. The American people is another question, because the American people have been given 10, 11 years of propaganda about Saddam Hussein, and I'm not here to buff Saddam Hussein's image, don't get me wrong, but the American people are so inured to the claim that Saddam Hussein is the next Adolf Hitler that I believe that the American people may go for just about anything or anything, including a nuclear weapon against him. But that doesn't mean those of us who oppose that shouldn't express ourselves, and those around the world shouldn't oppose this war in Iraq, that whether it ends in nuclear war or not is inevitably going to end with the death of thousands upon thousands of more Iraqi civilians. And how many Iraqi civilians?
That was an interview by Pauline Bartolone, our intrepid foreign correspondent, working currently with Radio for Peace International in Costa Rica. She was interviewing Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive. That does it for the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center Radio News for Monday, March 25th, 2002. The Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center can certainly use any help from the community. Like WEFT, it is a purely volunteer-run, not-for-profit institution. So from staffing the space in downtown Urbana to producing radio news that is disseminated here on WEFT and on the Internet, to technical expertise, any and all contributions of time, effort, and money are would be very, very welcome. So for more information on the IMC, give us a call at 344-8820 or drop in at our space any evening of the week at 218 West Main in downtown Urbana, right where Springfield and Main split. So, you're listening to the WEFT Courier on 90.1 FM, WEFT Champaign. That was the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center Radio News.